Okay, thank you. Good morning, Elias.
What shall we discuss, my friend?
Oh, I'm just happy to be with you. Okay, I'm going to start with a question that a situation, an issue I've had for a long time. I really would like to be slim, and my reasons are for health and mobility. But I have a very strong tendency to gain weight, and I am carrying more weight than I'm pleased about. My attention is on food a lot. I even dream about food and eating, even if I'm not hungry. And in the past, I've had some counterpart action that I worked with and released, talked to. I don't know if it was a focus, but a counterpart who was starving and just got some release or relief from the enjoyment of how much I eat and enjoy. I'm aiming to listen to my body and act on what it tells me, but there's something I'm missing in order to change my perception, and my guess is that it's how I relate to my body that's a little awry. And even further, that it relates to me trusting my body. And I wonder if you can help me to work with this.
Very well. I will say to you, well, there are several components involved, and you are correct. It is involving your association with your body, your relationship with your body, how you perceive your body. And I would say that part of that is very typical. But it can be difficult or challenging to alter that perception. The perception is that your body fractions almost independent of you. That it does what it wants to do, whether you want it to or not. And that, figuratively speaking, it almost has a mind of its own. Now, in that, you also recognize that your body communicates to you in different manners. And one of those communications is that it creates impulses to eat. That it tells you want to eat, even if you aren't hungry. Now, let me also say to you that although there are many individuals that use food to be soothing and comforting, and although I would say that there have been a few times in your life that you have done that also, that isn't your main direction. You don't actually consistently express in that direction. You don't use food as a soothing element. I would say that you do have a considerably developed sense of taste and smell.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have a developed sense of touch in the capacity of noticing and appreciating textures. Now, in that, in relation to food, that translates in a capacity of genuinely liking food.
Yes, absolutely, and I don't want to let that go. It's a wonderful way to experience the world.
I understand. And in that, then, it is a matter of recognizing that this, too, is a matter of balance. That it isn't about denying yourself. It isn't about expressing to yourself that you can't have what you enjoy and that you genuinely do enjoy food and the taste of it and the sensation of it and the smell of it, that your senses are significantly developed in that direction to genuinely appreciate food. Therefore, there are several factors involved to be moving in a direction of balance. One is recognizing that it is significant to have something that is of equal importance as food to help you to create a balance.
Okay.
That is an important factor. Finding something, and let me say to you, once again, I will use this as an example, which I have with other people. It seems ludicrous, but it is very accurate. Most people will not actually respond to expressing to themselves that their health is equally as important as a habit that they want to break.
Mm-hmm.
Because in actuality, for most people, their health, unless it is actually physically immediately being threatened by death, their health is not enough of a priority to make it important enough to rival whatever the habit is.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is about finding something else that is important enough. Now, let me say to you, although some of those expressions might be related to health, you might not necessarily perceive them in that manner or make an association with them in that manner, such as you might express that you notice that your mobility is limited.
Right.
You don't like that. And that you could actually conceive of moving in a direction of making that expression of mobility more important, and that it could become important enough to be
Okay.
That is only one example. But the point is finding something that is important enough to you that you can make that equal to the expression of the food, and therefore it will motivate you. Because if it isn't equal, it won't be enough. And you will simply continue with the habit and with the food, and in that you will continue to procrastinate and express excuses to yourself in relation to not changing.
Understand. So it's not so much a matter of a diet as replacing, adding new pleasures that are productive.
Yes. No, it is not a matter of a diet. I would say that is most likely an avenue that will lead you in a direction of disappointment. Because most likely it will either not be satisfying at all, or it will only be satisfying temporarily, and then you will likely move in a direction of being frustrated or not satisfied with it, and you will lose motivation. And if you don't have an almost immediate payoff, that also will affect your motivation. Therefore, that being the reason that finding something that is equally important to you is significant, because that will give you almost an immediate payoff.
Understood.
And this, in addition, it is a matter of creating balances. Now, that can be challenging because you might not always want to be expressing that balance, but it is a matter of how important you make it. That is the most significant piece. Now, in that, it is important to balance how much you move with how much you consume.
Oh, wow.
Because your body as a human is designed in a specific capacity, that how much you consume is to match how much you move.
And we're not talking calories here, we're talking time and value.
Yes. No, we are not speaking about calories. We are speaking about function with how much you move. And in that, now, momentarily, stop and think about when you were a child. Not children now, because I would say that how many of your societies have moved in recent time frameworks, they have changed, and therefore children now incorporate a battle, in a manner of speaking, with obesity because they don't move. But think about when you were a child. There likely were not very many fat children.
Not really, no.
Reason for that is because when you were a child, children were very active. They played outside, they explored, they engaged a considerable amount of activity. Children don't do that as much today as they did in previous time framework. But when you think about children when you were a child, you didn't have to think about calories. You didn't have to think about how much you consumed. You could eat and not be concerned about being overweight. And I would say that most children expressed the same. Why? Because you naturally followed the design of your physical manifestation, your body consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You balanced what you consume with what activity you engage. Being active, moving, not necessarily exercising. Children aren't exercising, they play.
Mm-hmm.
And they move.
I want to just add something to that. I was quite a thin child, very thin, but, and I moved certainly more than I do now, but I was still sedentary because I was an artist. From the time I could pick up a pencil, I would be sitting and drawing. So even though they weren't such physical activities, I balanced my enjoyment of food most of the time with painting or drawing or doing portraits. So more moving and more activities that I loved.
Now, in this, what I would say to you is, as you develop and as you engage different stages of your life and age, and I am not speaking of aging in the capacity that you are accustomed to, but simply the development, the different stages of your life,
mm-hmm.
as especially a female individual, you move through different stages of your life in relation to different functions of your body consciousness. Now, in relation to your function of your body consciousness now, at this stage in your life, it is expressing in a direction in which it now reverts back to, or has for a considerable time framework, back to the expression of balancing action with consumption. There is a considerable time framework in a female individual's life in which the activity aspect of their life isn't actually as significant because they are in a particular stage, in a manner of speaking, of their life in which their body chemistry and their physiology has changed, and it balances in different manners. But once you move into identify as menopause.
Right.
Once you move into that stage of your life and beyond that, then you move into a stage in which your body consciousness once again requires that balance of movement in relation to consumption.
Okay.
Therefore, that would be the second piece, the second important component that you begin to engage more movement. That can be done in many different manners. You don't have to join a gym. You don't have to exercise in a traditional capacity, but it is important that you are engaging movement. Therefore, you can engage dancing, or you can be engaging a practice such as yoga or Tai Chi. You can involve yourself in any type of activity that will allow you to incorporate movement on a daily basis. Some individuals choose to be engaging hiking because they enjoy being in nature. And in that is sufficient. That is enough. That is what I am expressing to you. It isn't a matter of you must be engaging a tremendous exercise program. That isn't necessary. But it is necessary to be balanced.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
In this, also, it is a matter of the third piece, which is also involved with the balance aspect. And in that, it is a matter of being aware in the present of that balance and of impulses, and not always following that feeling.
That's okay.
What becomes the habit. It isn't actually the food that is the habit. It is following the feeling that is the habit. Following that feeling of the impulse to eat, simply to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Eat because you can, and not because you are hungry.
Mm-hmm. And choose to make something else that I enjoy more important at that moment.
Yes. Intentionally, this is a piece of learning how to live intentionally and choose intentionally. That you acknowledge the feeling, you recognize this is familiar, I see it, I know what this is. And you aren't denying yourself. You are acknowledging that feeling. And then you are making an intentional choice to say, no, I will substitute that impulse with a different action. And that is when you use your other importances to express
Doesn't that impulse lend towards distrusting the body consciousness?
I would say realistically to you, yes and no. Because in one capacity, yes, it does lend to not trusting the body consciousness in the capacity of that you don't trust it to be moving in your best interest. That you are reinforcing that association, that it has a mind of its own, or that it moves independently of you, that you aren't creating that. Therefore, in actuality, it isn't as much that you aren't trusting your body, but you aren't trusting yourself.
Okay.
Then conversely, it lends to that you, in a manner of speaking, do somewhat trust your body because you listen to it and because indulge it. Therefore, it is somewhat of a double-edged sword. It creates a situation in which you don't trust yourself, but you do trust the communication of your body that it is speaking to you. And you answer it. And you indulge it. Therefore, it is not as black and white as it lends to you not trusting. It does, but it doesn't.
Okay, I think I just got a flash. It's sort of like an automatic thing and trusting it and just going with the automatic side, but I always have a choice.
And it is somewhat convoluted, and it is confusing, but this is the reason that we simplify by expressing, defining all of it, and then giving you directions and methods how to address to it in a manner in which you aren't denying yourself, because that definitely will not be successful. And the more you deny yourself, the more you want to move in the direction of whatever you are denying. That is definitely not a successful direction. Aversion isn't successful. But if you are moving in a direction in which you are making something else equally as important. You aren't denying the importance of the food and how much you like it, because that would be ludicrous. You do like it. But you are expressing that that isn't the only importance to you. You have other expressions that are important also.
Well, this makes a lot of sense, and I have something I can work with now, and something else related clicked in. For the last few weeks, I've had like I don't have skin problems. I don't. I never had skin problems, but I've been breaking out in rashes or bumps, and I say to myself, okay, what's my body telling me? It's telling me I'm itching to do something. I'm really itching to move, and I'm breaking out. I want to change the lethargy. And I think part of this also, since my husband passed away almost a year ago now, I've gained maybe 15 pounds, and there's been a lot of sedentary time, and maybe my body's telling me that.
Let me also express to you, my friend, another piece for you individually. This is simply for you. That you actually can incorporate another piece in this process to help you. Because you have moved in the direction so successfully of connecting with your husband.
Right.
And because you have allowed yourself to be so objectively aware of the presence of his energy, you can use that to aid you in this process. You can use that as part of your expression of what is equal or more important than the food and the impulse of the food, because you are still engaging that relationship. And in that, you can actually enlist, by invitation, his energy to help you to move in different directions.
Wow.
Not follow the feeling, not follow the impulse. You can actually invite him to help you that whenever you have that impulse, whenever you express that feeling, that is the time that you invite him to interact with you.
Okay.
Therefore, that will give you something different to pay attention to. Now, in that, don't move in a direction in which you aren't participating. Therefore, don't move in a direction in which you are simply waiting for him to interact with you when you have an impulse. But that each time you have an impulse, you are expressing that invitation, come and play with me now.
Ah, I love that.
And in that definitely will be an expression that is equally as important to you, and that you will pay attention to, and in that move in a direction of allowing yourself to pay attention to that rather than paying attention to the impulse to eat. And let me also express to you, realistically, when you have that impulse to eat, even when you aren't hungry, your body consciousness does generate a feeling of wanting that food. And therefore, because it is generating that feeling of wanting that food, it also influences your thought mechanism to be translating that. And so then you think about food. And that doesn't entirely disappear immediately because you are making something else important and because you are paying attention to something else. It does go away. It does stop, but it doesn't necessarily do it immediately. Therefore, you might be engaging with your partner and inviting him to play with you in that moment when you have that impulse. And you might notice his energy, and you might also still notice that the impulse hasn't entirely disappeared. That is natural, because the body consciousness is accustomed to being answered. Therefore, it continues to send the signal. But in that, it will stop. It is merely a matter of you not succumbing to it, in a manner of speaking, but continuing to express that acknowledgement. Yes, I hear you. And I am still choosing to move in this direction instead.
Okay, this is wonderful, and I will start working with this. Thank you so much.
You are exceptionally welcome, my friend. I would say to you that you are fortunate that you have this ability. You have allowed yourself to thin those veils of separation, and that you have this ability to connect with your husband actually gives you an advantage in how you can be adjusting to this situation more easily.
A question that connects to this, when I am connecting with John, I can sense his energy, I can feel it, and I can commune with it. But the words that come into my head are translated into words that I would want to hear. They're my words. And when he was in the physical, they weren't his words. He was grammata aligned. He didn't talk a whole lot, and he didn't gush. And even though I sense it's his energy, it just translates into my words and feelings, and it's confusing to me. I feel like I'm confused with the reality. What?
And you might be making it up.
Yeah, what world am I living in? Worlds.
Let me say to you, it isn't fantasy, and you aren't making it up. And what I would say to you is that just as when he was physically focused, not have expressed in words tremendously, but it didn't matter because you knew what it meant.
Yeah.
Therefore, even in that, you weren't necessarily thinking about it in the same capacity because he was physically present. Therefore, you didn't have to think about it as much or translate that energy as much. You knew what it meant. And in that, even though he may not have expressed in words as much, you still translated it in the same manner. Now you don't have words, so to speak. You have energy, and with that energy, now you are translating that energy into words.
Oh, thank you for that. And I remember when we were first getting to know each other and in the early parts of our relationship, and he was not vocal about his feelings, and I would say, you know, you don't usually tell me you love me, and he would say, what do you mean? Every time I hold you, I'm telling you I love you.
Precisely, precisely. Now, in that, this is what I am saying to you, that he was communicating to you, and you knew it. Because he told you, and in that you understood that communication. It is the same now, but now you are putting words to it instead of asking him to put words to it.
Right. I'm feeling his energy and translating it.
Yes. And you are doing so accurately.
Thank you. Thank you for the reassurance.
You are very welcome, my friend.
I wanted to ask again more questions in the physical related to the non-physical. When in the physical, an individual's born and he doesn't have memory of who he is or where he's from or other focus experiences. And in this way, I figure he can best explore his theme through the beliefs and the structure and design of his body consciousness. So after he disengages the individual, if he chooses to continue to objectify in the non-physical for a length of time, does he still have full memory, or it's only there if he intentionally accesses it while he's objectifying in the non-physical?
Once he remembers his death, they have full memory.
Okay.
So, and they have full awareness of what they are engaging, what they are doing, and where they are. Therefore, that is the key piece. That is the deciding factor. Once they remember their death, then yes, the individual can choose intentionally to continue to be engaging in that aspect of non-physical reality in which they are continuing to create physical imagery. They are continuing to explore in a very similar capacity to your physical reality. They aren't in your physical reality, and they know that, but they are creating imagery that mirrors it very closely. And there are many individuals that for a considerable time framework.
Why?
Because at that point, then they know how to manipulate. And it becomes fun. They can be in one location, so to speak, physically, and they can imagine themselves to be an entirely different location, and they will be there.
Mm-hmm.
They can instantly create different physical manifestations. They can manipulate their reality very easily and very quickly, and that becomes fun. They also have no delay, so to speak, in hypothetical example, let us say that the individual decides they want to be in Italy, and they are immediately then in Italy, and they want to fluently speak the language, and they can. Therefore, in that, they have tremendous freedom in what they can explore, what they can create, and that can be considerably fun, and many, many, many individuals do choose to continue in that direction for a time frame where it's before they actually engage non-physical transition in which they shed that objective awareness related with their previous reality and their perception. But that they incorporate that action for quite some time in a manner of speaking before they choose to move in that direction of non-physical transition.
Well, when an individual in his physical life has experienced some painful issues that may not be resolved, when he disengages, is all that energy unreleased, or is he holding still some of those attachments? And is that period of objectifying a time when he can explore resolving those issues, or is healing necessary? I know these are a lot of questions, but they're all related.
I understand, and I would express that they are excellent questions. And in that, what I would say to you is, once again, it is a twofold answer. Before the individual remembers their death, the experience is different. I would say that if an individual incorporates a significant issue, now that is the key, a significant issue that is unresolved, then yes, that does interplay with their experience when they are blinked in non-physically before they remember their death.
Okay.
That can generate some challenges. Now, they are different. They aren't as severe as they are, or they appear to be, in physical focus, but they still remain. Therefore, what I would say to you is this shows itself most significantly in situations in which individuals generate that choice of suicide. Most individuals that generate suicide, it isn't necessarily as much that they actually want to die. It is more that they want whatever they are experiencing to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, death doesn't necessarily do that. That when the individual blinks in non-physically, it does change. First of all, because whatever led to or contributed to the individual's death disappears, because they don't remember their death immediately. was involved in their death and was a contributing to their death isn't necessary to be experienced any longer because it accomplished the point. They died. Now, in that is what creates the change in the situation. Therefore, it won't be precisely the same. Whatever the issue was, whatever the difficulty was, let us say that the individual was experiencing tremendous fear or depression, in that, it will be different. It won't be as tremendously debilitating, but it won't disappear. It will still be somewhat of an issue. And in that, most of them don't actually genuinely accomplish addressing to that issue until they remember their death. Therefore, they do experience some discomfort or angst or anxiety or restlessness. It isn't all bliss. And in that, once they remember their death, that generally changes the situation. Because once they remember their death, that also changes their perception of themselves, of reality, of what is important. They know that they are not in physical focus any longer. And because they know that they aren't in physical focus any longer, they also realize that many of the subjects or expressions that were important to them, that were likely causing difficulties or issues, aren't valid and aren't important any longer. And therefore, they simply fall away. They don't have to, in your terminology, work through the issue. It simply falls away because they recognize that it isn't important, doesn't actually have any substance if they aren't in physical focus. Therefore, it's impossible to separate that issue any longer.
So when they remember their death and they choose to objectify, it's not for the purposes of healing or working through the issue. It's just for exploration.
Yes.
And fun. Okay. All right. That answers my question. There was something you said that triggers the next question. You were talking about if you're objectifying and you go to Italy, you don't have to struggle learning Italian. We've talked before about the resonance of location, and now I'm curious about the different energies of spoken languages and their resonance. The English is my mother tongue, and it, I love its subtleties and its beauty. But years later, I was in my 50s and I studied Italian for a few years. And when I speak Italian, Elias, my energy changes. The way I emote changes, how I experience life changes. I feel more intense and vivid and free. And one major difference that I've observed is that most Italian words end in vowels. And when I speak Italian, I am breathing in more air with each word. But as far as languages in general, some to me sound more staccato and others are more musical. And some are actually really unpleasant for me to listen to. And just as you helped me understand the resonance of location in relation to the individual, would you speak for a moment about the differences in languages and how that can change our experience and our energy? Although Italy is surrounded by water, whereas Germany, almost surrounded, is more landlocked, which
Yes, but in that, I would say that regardless, the actual physical land of Germany is not as actually harsh. It isn't as mountainous. It isn't as cliffy isn't as rocky.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, it isn't as challenging to be developing. Whereas in Italy, the land is very diverse. Some areas it is literally surrounded by water,
mm-hmm.
or underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And in other places it is tremendously rocky, and in that generating other types of challenges in relation to agriculture. But regardless, the people in that area of the world chose to meet those challenges with flow and with beauty and with fun. And therefore, in creating that type of culture, they created that type of language that flows and that is flowery, whereas the language in relation to German is much more guttural. It is harsh. It is more raspy in a manner of speaking. Now also, I would express a different example, that if you moved into another area of your world, such as certain areas of Africa, the language of Swahili is also very flowing, but very fast. It is expressed in a manner in which the words are spoken so fast that they seem to run into each other. And that is the development of another type of culture, in which the culture was developed not in relation to difficulties with land or harshness of culture in a barbarian type of capacity, but rather in another type of flowing, but in relation to family, community, and village.
I see. And the individual is affected by that culture, by that subsequent development of the language.
Most definitely.
Okay.
Well, notice that in Swahili, the individuals speak very quickly. The words are almost slurred together. They are expressed very fast. And in that, it is because they don't concentrate on words as much as actions.
Uh-huh.
In the Far East, in China, and in Japan, the language is also very precise, but very stark. But mm-hmm. in a different capacity from German.
Yeah.
Language is very instrumental. It is very telling about the culture that develops it. And it is a very important part of the culture because it is how the people in that culture express themselves they interact and how they connect. It is a very important and significant aspect of the development of any culture.
Elias, it's past the bell ringing, and I'd love to continue, but I don't want Mary to get too tired.
Very well. I shall be greatly, greatly anticipating our next meeting, my dear friend. I express tremendous stimulation in our conversation.
Oh, I really appreciate our communion, and I thank you so, so much.
Are tremendously welcome, my dear friend. I express excellent encouragement to you and great acknowledgement of everything that you are accomplishing. I will be with you in this upcoming time framework with your challenge adding new importance.
Thank you so much.
You are exceptionally welcome, my friend. In wondrous lovingness to you, as always. Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Hello?
Hello, hello.